Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. Kind of a disproportionate number of stories we've covered over the past few years from Yellowknife. Nothing wrong with covering stories from Yellowknife, but there's like 19,000 people living in Yellowknife. There's a lot of other communities that are the same size or bigger that you don't hear us cover at all. But that's not where these stories originated. They just happened to come from Yellowknife. You remember these stories? There's the one about a reporter who was covering a criminal trial who was just violently ejected out of the courthouse by like a team of law enforcement agents. They just trampled him out of the building. There's the one about the reporter who was banned from RCMP press conferences because they didn't like his journalism. They thought his journalism was biased against him, and they didn't like his, quote, disrespectful tone. And there's the one about the reporter who got arrested and charged by the RCMP while he was photographing the RCMP at a crime site. So the thing about all of those stories out of Yellowknife is that they are all about the same reporter. His name's John McFadden. He is a veteran reporter for the Yellowknifer newspaper. And I have been trying to get a hold of this guy to interview him for months now. And he joins me from Yellowknife in a minute. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Jonathan Doda, Sean Chen, Alex Hosselet, Max Stern, Molly Cronin, Catherine Johnston, Robert Cowan, and Johanna Mansonen. Johanna, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because I like listening to Canadian podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. That's BetterHelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is also brought to you by FreshBooks, the initial sponsor of this whole CanadaLand thing. Guys, this is the time of year where before I was using FreshBooks, I would start to get very anxious and nervous and feeling like I was just evading responsibility because I knew that tax time was coming and that I was ill-prepared and that there was this awful chore ahead of me that I just didn't want to do. And I now live without that anxiety. It's just a whole bucket of bad feelings that has gone from my life because FreshBooks makes tax time so incredibly simple. It will instantly add up what you've earned, how much HST you've taken in, how much you've put out. It'll spit everything out in a format that is super easy, super compatible with what you have to do with your tax returns, whether you're doing them or somebody else. It's just a breeze. You press a few buttons and that chore is off your plate and you're fine. FreshBooks is an accounting department for people and small businesses that can't afford accounting departments. It is incredibly powerful and it is stupidly easy to use. 30 days for free, no credit card required. If and when you decide to become a customer, tell them that CanadaLand sent you. Go to freshbooks.com/CanadaLand. You will be doing this show a favor. Thank you, FreshBooks. John, I understand you've had some trouble with the law.
Yes, I guess you could say that.
You want to start at the beginning?
Well, sure. I came to Yellowknife to be the news director for what is now known as the Moose radio station, CJCD-FM. That was in November 2012 is when I started. And in September of 2013, to September 17th to be exact, I had gone to the Yellowknife courthouse to cover a bail hearing for a 17-year-old girl who was charged with murder. But as I lined up to get into the courthouse that day, it was being held in a fairly small courthouse, the sheriff said to me, "You can't bring your knapsack, your backpack, into the courtroom." And I said, "Well, it's the tools of my trade. It's my notepad and my pen and my tape recorder in case I need to do any interviews afterwards." And he was quite adamant and not very friendly about it, that under no circumstances would I be bringing that backpack into the courtroom. And I was a little put off just because of his attitude. He, he said, "Well, you can leave it out here." And I said, "Well, I'm not leaving my backpack in the hallway of a courthouse. There tends to be a few characters in a courthouse, obviously, as you know, Jesse, and I didn't want to do that." So luckily for me, a colleague of mine who worked for a different radio station was good enough to put the backpack in his vehicle while I held his spot in line, because we knew that if we got out of this lineup, we weren't going to get into this courtroom. But my feathers were ruffled right off the hop. I just got the sense from this sheriff, and that's what they call the court security officers up here as sheriffs, that he just didn't want me in that courtroom. That was the sense that I got from him. Nonetheless, the bail hearing started, and I was there for, I'm going to say, a little over an hour, and nature called. So I left and didn't see that sheriff to tell him that I'd be back. Went to use the washroom, came back, and he said, "Oh no, I gave your seat away." And he said it quite smugly, And frankly, he seemed pretty pleased with himself that he had given away my seat in the courtroom. And I said, well, I'll stand at the back. No, you can't do that. And I said, well, I need to speak to your supervisor then. And I said that to him a couple of times. I need the name of your boss. I need your supervisor's name. And the next thing I know, he had grabbed me by the shoulders. And he was pushing me, and I could hear my shirt ripping, and I thought to myself, what is going on here? And so I planted my feet just a little bit, just enough to make sure that, you know, I didn't go down. And he at that time got very aggressive, pushed me down one hallway, down another hallway, and into the heavy glass door leading to the street. And in fact, through that first door, and then head first into a second glass door. I saw a friend later who bandaged me up, and she said, no, you look like you've lost a fight. And frankly, that's what I felt like too.
I can tell our listeners, I'm watching a video of this right now, and we can talk later about how the video came to be made public. And you're not exaggerating from what I can see here. Like, at first, it's just like you're getting the bum's rush out the door. But once you get to the vestibule, it gets really ugly, and it looks like you got a real bash to the noggin, and then there's these three big dudes on top of you, and it's kind of hard to tell what's being done at that point, but it's violent.
It is violent. I mean, I don't think anybody can argue that, and I feel fortunate that I wasn't seriously hurt, because if you see my head hit that glass door with no way to brace myself, I don't think it's a stretch to say that I could have broken my neck. Luckily for both myself and for him, I didn't.
You know, we're just getting warmed up here. This is the first of many stories, but without getting too bogged down into the he said of this, the Justice Department found that the sheriff didn't do anything wrong. How did you come to, I guess, lose this decision?
It's a good question, Jesse. So I didn't do anything about it initially. So they finally let me up. They let me out of handcuffs. And the RCMP officer, who was about 23, I'm going to guess, said to me, you shouldn't be here. She's only 17. It doesn't matter that she's 17. You don't get to decide whether a reporter can cover a 17-year-old girl's bail hearing when she's charged with murder. I know the Youth Criminal Justice Act, and I believe that it supersedes your scant few months likely in the business. And that's when I actually got angry and realized that both the sheriff and this RCMP officer felt that it was their job to keep me out of this courtroom and to censor at least my radio station when it came to reporting on this girl's bail hearing, which again is just outrageous, and something that if it happened in Toronto or any major center in Canada would be front page news, and as I say, it is frankly just outrageous. I explained to him that he didn't know what he was talking about, and he was wrong, and that I had every right to be in that courtroom. They made me leave the courthouse. Like, they talked about charging me, and they said, well, if you leave, we won't charge you. Now, I almost wish they had to charge me, because I really don't know what they would have charged me with, but they never did say that. They just said, if you leave now, we won't charge you. So I did. I left, and I literally went back to my radio station and told them that I'd fallen off my bike. But as I thought about it, and as I spoke to two MLAs, members of the Legislative Assembly, over beverages about a month later, they said, oh no, you absolutely have to report this, because this fellow could be doing this on a daily basis, and you can't not tell his superiors what he has done. So I did so, and I asked for $120 for my ripped clothing. I literally had worn the best clothes I owned at the time that day. So I met with four government officials, three of them from the Justice Department. I didn't sign a document, but I was presented with a document where they acknowledged that they would give me $120. They didn't assign blame to me, and they didn't accept blame on their own behalf. They didn't apologize, but they agreed to give me $120.
No harm, no foul. Go buy some new pants.
And yeah, that's right. I think I spent it on beer, but that's neither here nor there. I got $120 out of them anyhow. I didn't ask them what disciplinary measures they had taken or what they had told this sheriff about his actions. I mean, they didn't say that I had done anything wrong. I went on my merry way with my check for $120. 2 years later, the senior communications advisor for the Justice Department of the Northwest Territories, I'm not going to say her name, the senior communications advisor, and Dave Bedini.
Dave Bedini of the Rio Static Band and National Post columnist, sure.
Correct. They were in the drive-thru at McDonald's, and he asked her about this incident where I had been allegedly assaulted in the courthouse. And she just made it up that the judge was upset. She made it sound like it started in the courtroom itself, which it did not. She then said that I had tripped over my own feet, and furthermore, that it wasn't going to go well for me in my current court case. So this is a Justice Department official making a prediction on the outcome of a case that was before the courts. I think most people can understand the ethic mistake that was on her part. Nonetheless, Bedini told me what she had said, in fact, gave me his notes transcribed, and I kind of lost my mind. I mean, this was 2 years after the incident, and here it was being painted as pretty much my fault. So she also said that she knew all this because she had seen the video, and I knew nothing of any video. I probably should have. I knew there was cameras in the hallway of that courthouse, but I had never asked to see a video and never knew of the existence of a video. So I asked for the video and they denied me access to it. So I went through the Freedom of Information and Privacy Commissioner and in fact was awarded a copy of the video. They let me see the video. I went and saw the video with my lawyer and my boss. And then I said, well, I want a copy of this. And no. So I went and I saw the Deputy Justice Minister. He and I had had a working relationship for several years. He'd been in a different department and he said, I'll make it happen. So he got me a dub of the original courthouse video, which is the one that you have seen, took it to the CBC, they aired it, and then they followed up with the Justice Department. Well, what did you do about this? And they had said, nope, the security officer did nothing wrong. This guy had caused a problem. It's too bad that he was hurt and had his clothes ripped, but that's the way she goes. And again, those aren't quotes, but that's essentially what one of the courthouse officials said. It seems like they're ticked that I would release this video to the media, and this was their response, that he got what he deserved is essentially how I've interpreted what they've had to say about it. And it hasn't sat well with me, Jesse, I don't mind telling you.
All right, well, we're jumping forward in time and skipping a bunch of stuff that happened. Let's just back up a little bit. Going back to just right after the incident at the courthouse. So here you are. It'll be years before the video is released, years before this is actually dealt with formally, and eventually they'll just say that this was handled appropriately, even after the video is made public. But at this time, you've just been violently ejected by the courthouse. They end up giving you $120 to buy some new pants or to make up for your ripped pants. And then there was another incident involving the reporting of this break and entering and sexual assault.
That's right. In between when that incident happened and getting the actual video, I switched jobs. I left the radio station and moved over to the newspaper in town. A news release came in and it said that a fellow had been charged with break and enter and sexual assault after a woman's apartment had been broken into and she'd been sexually assaulted. And further, we're charging him with another sexual assault and a break and enter, which happened 2 weeks ago. I knew that it was incumbent upon the RCMP to have warned the public because a man had broken into a woman's apartment and sexually assaulted her and gotten away with it. Well, it seems to me that logical policing would say, well, we've got to put out a news release. We haven't caught the guy, but we need to at least warn the public that this guy is out there. I immediately went to two women's advocates in Yellowknife and said, you know, these guys caught this guy, but he did this to 2 weeks ago, or he's alleged to have done this 2 weeks ago, and they put out no warning at all to the public and the women of Yellowknife. And they both lost their minds, and they were the genesis of my story. They were the essence of my story. I didn't say that I had a problem with this. These two advocates for females in Yellowknife did. Obviously, they didn't like the story. The headline read, RCMP failed to warn Yellowknifers about sexual assault.
Yeah, but that's no small... Like, how many people live in Yellowknife? Like
20,000.
20,000 people. There's a B&E and a sexual assault, and the RCMP failed to tell the community... And then the same person does it again.
I mean, it was one of the easiest stories, Jesse, that I've ever done. It was literally gift wrapped for me by the RCMP. And I said to them at the time, why did you not warn the public about on the loose sexual predator. And it turns out this guy was in jail for a vicious daylight sexual assault and had just gotten out of jail when he did this, the first of these two later ones. And again, I guess about this time of year, 2015. And they said, well, we didn't have a suspect and we didn't want to alarm the public. And they say that a lot up here. We don't want to alarm the public. And I said, well, if you didn't have a suspect, that might be reason to, more reason, frankly, to put out the news release. This business of alarming the public, that I feel you might have a duty to warn the public. Let the public decide whether they should be scared or not. That's not your call.
Listen, you're exhaustively defending this story. I got to tell you, I mean, you know, you covered in Toronto. Every day we have reports like that here, that there was an alleged assault on this street. Everybody watch out. There's somebody who's out on the loose. That's just like the daily business of municipal reporting here.
Absolutely. And again, I knew that they didn't divulge information to the level that they did in Toronto. But here was a situation where a warning needed to go out to the public and it didn't. And I was happy to write a story that pointed that out. And when I say happy, I believe that I was helping particularly the women of Yellowknife understand what had gone on here. And I said to the RCMP, well, did you call the jail? Did you call the North Slave Correctional Center to see who had just gotten out of jail? Because you've said you didn't have a suspect. Well, that would be the first thing I would do, is call the jail who just got out. I mean, if we have a sexual offender who was just released from jail, that might be the first place you'd look. And they wouldn't tell me. They wouldn't discuss whether they'd called the jail or not. But 2 weeks later, they held a news conference and admitted that they had screwed it up and that they were changing their protocols, whereby when a dangerous offender, whether they be a sexual offender or a violent offender, gets released from the North Slave Correctional Center, if they felt he was a risk to reoffend, they would warn the public of that. And secondly, that they would, if there was a sexual assault or some form of violence, that they would do a news release and let the public know that. And we've already seen where they have failed in that regard. But nonetheless, the point is, I wrote my story. 2 weeks later, they had a news conference and changed their protocol. And I feel quite strongly, 99.9% for sure, even though they wouldn't admit it, the police wouldn't. But it was on the basis of my story that they changed their protocols. I'm sure they got some heat for it.
Sure. John McFadden gets results. And I doubt they thanked you for it, though.
I wish they had of, but they didn't.
So now you've had these two altercations with them. They roughed you up then. And then you wrote a story that really publicly embarrassed them. I mean, it seems like there were repercussions.
By April of 2015, my relationship with the media relations officer had deteriorated, where she wasn't returning my calls. And I was quite frustrated with this. I was the police reporter for the newspaper, and the media relations officer for the RCMP wouldn't talk to me. There wasn't much I could do about it. And my bosses didn't do a whole lot about it either. They just sort of waited for things to change. But I went to go to a news conference where they'd made a drug bust. So in other words, I felt, well, they'll have to speak to me now. And sure enough, they barred me from this news conference. And I think that's when Canada Land first got wind of me and who I am, in that nobody's ever heard of a reporter being barred from an RCMP news conference. But I showed up at the door. I just happened to arrive at the same time as a CBC videographer, a colleague and friend of mine. And the media relations officer said, no, you're not coming in. And I said, well, why is that? And she said, because of your disrespectful and unprofessional conduct. And I just went, well, okay, whatever, and walked back to work, told my bosses, my two senior editors. They both dropped everything and drove straight up to the RCMP headquarters and said, what disrespectful and unprofessional conduct? Well, they came up with one email that I think you guys have published on Canada Land that had please and thank you and was courteous and not disrespectful and not unprofessional at all. Sure, there might have been a couple of tough questions asked in it, but that's the job of a police reporter. So in my boss's words, not only was there no smoking gun, there was no gun. And that's when we started to realize that they were ticked about this story of months earlier where I had called them out, and that this was going to be their way of getting back at me by barring me from their news conference.
Well, that's what, you know, alerted us to this as a story, you know, just covering the media and its relationship with authority, with law enforcement, this kind of like almost like a principle saying, we don't like your attitude. you know, which maybe would be justified if you had been really, you know, truculent and obstinate or offensive to them. The emails showed just the opposite. And, you know, we speculated, as you are here, that the actual thing they took offense to was your coverage of them, your critical coverage. But we needn't speculate, because later on, CBC reporter Richard Gleason built on our work and was kind enough to credit us for kicking this off. And he ATIP'd the email correspondence between the RCMP, the local Yellowknife RCMP, and their superiors in Ottawa around what the hell to do about you. And those emails are a riot to read, and they're chilling, because you've got this situation where these local RCMP officers, and one in particular, basically saying to Ottawa, don't worry, we're just cutting this guy off. You don't have to worry about this, to the communications people in Ottawa. And Ottawa seems a little bit nonplussed at first. They say, look, we always try to work with media, and we're bound to provide them with timely information. They wanted to preserve the relationship. I'm just reading from their own emails, and Yellowknife said, there is no relationship. There's no relationship to protect with this guy.
In those emails, one of the civilian communications people, and in fact, the woman who we now get our information from, she is a civilian, she suggested cutting off the newspaper entirely. So again, if you could think, Jesse, of a you know, Toronto police saying, we're not going to release our news releases and speak to the Toronto Star anymore, that would be the equivalent in Toronto.
I mean, here's where we're getting at a bigger principle, is that, you know, we got an environment here where there's confusion within the federal police about whether or not they need to, like, let media in, or whether should the coverage be critical if that's justification to not allow the media in. I think we got a quote from the beginning saying, we don't see why it's in our interest to let this guy in, which is such a strange. Now, okay, if you've got sort of, you know, how else can I put it, an ignorant Mountie who doesn't understand that it's not really up to them, working in Yellowknife, that's one thing. But some of the communication that came back from Ottawa was equally chilling. I mean, first they were being pretty reasonable, and they were saying, you know, look, if you don't like this guy, you could lodge an official complaint. And in fact, the Yellowknifer is a member of the Alberta News Media Council, so there is a place to complain to. And Yellowknife didn't seem to know about that. They thought the only option was to blacklist you. But then there was some correspondence from Ottawa, from this one Paul Green, who's now an RCMP spokesperson in New Brunswick, who said, well, you know, there's always going to be biased reporters out there. We need to work at going around the media more and more.
I can only laugh, because I just don't know what that means. But sure, okay, if that's what their attitude is, fine.
Well, it's really strange. There's a federal police force having this conversation about whether or not they... I mean, this is like the deal between a free press and law enforcement. Wouldn't these guys know this? That as pesky and irritating and annoying as reporters, like, you just got to find a way to deal with them, because they are who they are and we are who we are. You know, this case off in Yellowknife has revealed this correspondence where they're kind of questioning the deal. Do we really need to keep doing that? I found it fascinating. It's amazing how these, you know, this very remote instance can give us some insight into that.
These folks don't think that that's any of our business. It's not the public's business, and it's not the media's business. It's only their business. Whether this guy got away with this, whether he's still on the streets, whether he's going to do it again, whether we should warn the public, that's of our concern, and it's not of the media's concern, and the public doesn't need to know that there's a sexual predator on their streets. So after I read what they had said, it made a lot more sense why they never issued this warning-style news release in the first place.
Okay, well, I can't imagine that they liked reading about themselves in Canada Land and later on the CBC after we made a thing of it. But did that help you at all? Were you able to just come do your job again?
Well, that's very interesting that you should ask that question, because as soon as the story hit Canada Land, within days, I called up the media relations officer and I addressed her as constable, and I just was like, well, where this is going to have to go all formal now. I'm not going to be calling her by her first name anymore. I'm just going to... And she said, you can call me by my first name. And everything went back to the way it was prior to the banning from the news conference, prior to about a month or so before that. The relationship returned to normal. She was taking my calls. She was doing her best to provide me with information. I can't say that it was because of the Canada Land story. I can say that it was directly after very within days after your story running on Canada Land that everything changed. Whether that came from higher up, whether she realized that barring me from a news conference was the wrong way to go and let's try and repair this relationship, I can't say. But all I know is that within days, everything returned to normal. So on the 4th of July, 2015, I was downtown socializing. And when I say socializing, and again, this is all in the court transcripts from the trial, I'd had a couple of beers. I'd had two beers. It was midnight.
The issue of your sobriety would later become a matter before the courts.
That's right. But we'll deal with that in a second. Nonetheless, I come out front of a downtown bar. I just happen to walk outside at the same time as the mayor of Yellowknife did. I took two drags off my cigarette, said goodnight to him, and said, I got to go see what this is all about, because there was a huge police presence across the street and down a little bit. And when I say a huge police presence for Yellowknife, at least anyhow, so a police cruiser is parked diagonally blocking one lane of traffic, and there's at least one other cruiser there, lights flashing, several officers in the area. There was no police tape out, so I walked behind a big white cargo van that seemed to be the center of their investigation. And the first officer that saw me said, what the F do you want? You shouldn't be here. Get the F out of here. And I was taken aback because I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't broken any laws. There was no police tape up. I couldn't know what they were up to. I was walking first across a street and then onto a sidewalk, and this is what he said to me, and I was stunned. And I thought, boy, I mean, all I am is a member of the public, and this is the way you're talking to me? So I went and got my camera, walked up, and started taking pictures. Again, no police tape, nothing preventing me from staying on this public sidewalk and taking photos. And the first officer came right up to me and said, No pictures. That's obstruction. And I said, it's not obstruction. And you can't stop me from taking these photographs. I'm standing on a public sidewalk. So they kind of huddle up a little bit. There's four officers. And then one officer comes back to me and says, yep, you can take all the photographs you want, John. Just don't get in our way.
Had you told them your first name? How do they know your name?
I know that one officer had dealt with me in the past. He and I had crossed paths when I'd had a break-in at my own cabin in Yellowknife. So he did, in fact, know who I was. The senior officer, oddly enough, did not testify at trial. I'm not sure why that was. She was the one that first said, you can't take photographs of us. That's obstruction. Nonetheless, I take 20 photographs. And the reason I took 20 photographs, and people would say, well, why would you need so many photographs? And I don't mind telling you that this was a big white 1990s cargo van with the side windows painted over with black paint. It looked, there was so much junk inside of it, you didn't know whether it was a band equipment or tools or both or just exactly what was in this van. But again, the windows blackened over with paint, Alberta plates. All I thought to myself, Jesse, was, boy, if a person was ever going to abduct a person, this would be the vehicle you would use to do it in. And as you know, we have a issue with missing and murdered Indigenous females in Canada, and that's an acute issue here in the Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories, in that half of our population is Indigenous. And, you know, I was making sure that there wasn't somebody tied up in the back of that van. I could have had a Pulitzer Prize winning photograph had I taken that photograph. So that's why I took 20 photographs. I probably, if they'd have been able to say to me, John, this is a traffic stop. We think that his license plates might be stolen. And that's all it is. You take a couple of pictures, but that's going to be all you need. That's all there is to it. I would have done that and walked away. But not only is it the way it's policy of Yellowknife RCMP that they do not speak to the media. They're forbidden by policy from saying anything other than the media relations officer. So after I take the 20th photograph, they come up and arrest me and say, no, you've obstructed us. You're charged with obstruction of a police officer. Put in the back of the police vehicle, handcuffs on extremely tightly, I might add. They take my camera. I'm in the cells for the better part of 3 hours. Finally, I never asked to speak to a lawyer. I thought, well, this should be an in and out, and this is a shame this has happened, but surely they're not going to hold me for any great length of time. They did. They held me for the better part of 3 hours. They let me out. I tried to call a lawyer. Now it's about 3 o'clock in the morning. The whole incident started at about midnight. I can't get a lawyer. I finally phoned my own MLA, and I think they can hear this through the door, and finally they release me. But this is after they have taken one photograph, the final photograph that I had taken, which was closer to the van, but not with the camera inside the van, not with the camera touching the van. I never touched the van. I know not to put my fingerprints on a van that's being searched. But their contention was this final photograph of the 20 was taken too close to the van, and that, in fact, obstructed their investigation.
Is a red flag here that they're taking the shots off of your camera? I mean, like, people are filming cops for a lot of different reasons these days. And if they can arrest you for filming them and then they can, take the images off of your device, what if they saw something there that they didn't like documenting their own behavior? At any point in this, did you say that you're from the media?
I'm sure I had said at some point, I'm John McFadden from the Yellowknife newspaper. Like, I had identified myself as media. There's no doubt about it to all the officers at the scene. And I guess what I should mention as well, so I'm taking these photographs, and that's when one of them said, "You're John McFadden, aren't you?" And that's when I knew that these guys knew who I was, knew I was the reporter who had been barred from the news conference and had written a story that didn't reflect well upon them. I knew then that they knew who I was, is what I meant. And I could tell by their reaction that they didn't think much of me being there and taking photographs, but that they had also realized that there was nothing that they could do about it, or so I thought at that time. But you're quite right, Jesse. They had my camera. They could have destroyed all the photographs off of it. They didn't. They took the one photograph that they insisted showed me be obstructing them, but it was still in my camera. They obviously made a copy for themselves. They didn't take any of the photographs and remove them or delete them or erase them, but no warrant.
I suppose, you know, I'm asking you as if it's this really burning issue. I mean, you know, from our point of view, yeah, we're supposed to identify ourselves as press. From their point of view, there's nothing legally different about a civilian, you know, which technically journalists are, taking photographs and a journalist. And you know, I'm citing these cell phone videos of cops killing people as a reason why this is problematic. Well, people who shoot those videos, almost all of them were not journalists. So kind of doesn't matter from their point of view. It's a bit more of a professional concern of ours.
Anybody. If you're standing on a public sidewalk and there's no police tape and you haven't crossed it, anybody could take video or still pictures of police activity. And frankly, they should. I encourage them to. And you're quite right. Thank God we don't see it in Canada like we do in the United States. But I think of Robert Chikansky at the Vancouver airport as the prime example in this country, where if that hadn't have been on video, I mean, the RCMP officers still lied about it, even though they tasered a man to death and it was caught on video. So again, I encourage people to do that, particularly if they're concerned that police might be doing something that they shouldn't be doing. But, you know, the police tape is in your trunk. You're the RCMP and Yellowknife. You're a police officer. You're not special. You're not really royal, and you're not mounted. You're not riding a horse anymore. I sometimes get from some of these officers, and again, not all of them. I want to make that clear, that it's some of them that feel that they're special police officers, and they don't need to use police tape. They can tell the public to F off and get out of here, because we're cops and we're in Yellowknife, and all they had to do was put up their police tape, and none of this would have happened in the first place. And the judge said as much, frankly.
Yeah, well, let's skip ahead to that, because I know the actual legal proceedings can get a little bit procedural, and without getting lost in the weeds, you were exonerated. The charges did not hold up against you. The ruling was pretty damning towards the officers. The judge ruled that the cops in question were evasive, if not obstinate, and that all three who testified against you showed a certain willingness to exaggerate during their testimony, making it hard for the judge to completely trust them as witnesses. He's talking about police officers, federal police officers. I mean, John, it's just one thing after the other. It's after that trial that your battle to get your hands on the tape of you being roughed up in the courthouse years earlier is successful, and that tape embarrasses them, if not the RCMP, the law enforcement community, the sheriff, and then there is a Mountie at the end of this tape. That story made its way around. I can't imagine living in a community as small as Yellowknife knowing that I had such an adversarial relationship with the local constabulary. I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier you needed the cops when your house got broken into. Other things can happen. Like, are you going to be taking on like one of these Starlight tours? Like, how is this going to end for you?
Fair question, but I think not. And again, I want to be clear. The three officers that testified in my case, I agree. Like, I had to sit there and listen to them. I had no witnesses to the actual event. We appealed. We put the photographs that I had taken on Facebook. We had a couple of other civilians in my photographs, I think two in total only. The police had said that I had incited a crowd. Well, there was no crowd. There's no crowd in any of my photographs, but we tried very hard to get a witness. We were unable to do so. So my lone witness was the female that I was with, who testified as to how much I had to drink. The judge agreed with her. The judge agreed with me. The judge didn't agree with the three officers at all, and you've laid out the reasons why he didn't.
And I mean, they lost, but we'll do them the favor of they basically said you came out of the bar drunk and belligerent. You were there was a crowd of 20 people. You were inciting them into some sort of a fervor against the cops. Their story was that you actually were making it hard for them to do their jobs, and that's why they had to arrest you. That did not hold up in court.
No, and no, it didn't. And the reason it didn't is because it isn't true. I don't think I'm going to worry too much about elaborating beyond that. The only thing that I said to any member of the public other than the police officers that were there was that I've asked them what's going on here and they won't tell me. That's the only thing I said to anybody. I did speak to the officers. I asked them why they were blocking off the street and searching this van, but the business of inciting a crowd was malarkey. I'll be honest with you, Jessica, I'm 54 years old. My hearing isn't what it once was. I said, in fact, it's been poor. Well, I had tubes in my ears when I was 4 years old. I've spent too many Who concerts up beside the stage. I'm a radio broadcaster by trade. I do project. My voice is louder than it needs to be, but I don't realize that because I don't hear very well. But the point is that just like the incident at the courthouse, this business of me being belligerent and loud is, I don't accept it. I don't accept it at all. And frankly, shouting in public is not a, depending upon what you're saying, is not a criminal offense anyhow. So
yeah, well, and judge didn't buy it either. But okay, so, you know, look, that behind you, then the video comes out. I'll ask you again, like you say, you're 54 years old. Are you scared walking the streets? Like,
no,
no one could say that you haven't kind of like done your job and kind of come back for more after taking your knocks. Are you looking for another change of scenery? Like, I would be worried to live in such a small community if I were loathed by the local cops.
Right. Let's put it this way. I'm not going to leave Yellowknife until I have a better job to go to. And it's not that I'm not looking. I'm always looking. If something comes along, I'll certainly consider it. But for the time being, I'm happy here. I have lots of friends. It's been very interesting the way the town and the city, rather, has viewed this. Some people couldn't care less that I was found not guilty. They don't believe you should poke your head into the police's business, whether you're media or not. Others fully support me and say, boy, you've really been given a hard, rough go in your time here in Yellowknife. I mean, I have not asked any questions that I wouldn't have asked in Toronto or Peterborough or anywhere else. All I've done is be a police reporter the same way I did it in Southern Ontario, and I've been barred from news conferences, beat up by a court officer, a court security officer, and arrested by the RCMP. Nobody likes to be called out when they've made mistakes, but when they have made mistakes, it's my job to do so and report on their activities. So I'm not in a panic rush to leave. Having said that, if something else comes along, I've been here for over 4 years now. I've learned an awful lot about the North, which I encourage all people from Southern Canada to do, because it's a real eye-opener. I'm glad I came here. I can deal with this and I can move forward, and that's what I intend to do.
That is your Canada Land Show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can reach me at jesse@canadalandshow.com anytime. I read what you send me. I respond when I can. We are on Twitter at Canada Land. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. People, by the time you are hearing this, I will already be off on vacation. So Thursday will be a guest host, and Monday, Ashley Chinati. She is going to be fantastic. You do not want to miss these episodes. This episode was produced by Katie Jensen. Katie is leaving us after 2 years here. She has produced 139 episodes of this show and others. She is the founding producer of The Imposter. We would not be where we are without her. We owe her an immense debt of gratitude. If you like anything you've heard on our network over the years, chances are she produced it. Katie, we will miss you, and I am green with envy over whoever gets to work with you next. Thank you, Katie Jensen. Also want to thank Robert Hiltz, who has been filling in as our interim news editor. He has done a fantastic job. And if he lived in Toronto, he would continue doing it, but he lives in Montreal. That's where you can find him. Thank you, Robert, for everything you've done. We now welcome Jonathan Goldsby as our permanent news editor here in our offices in Toronto. Next Imposter is on Wednesday. Shortcuts with Ashley is on Thursday. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.